Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Southwest Florida Business Podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and today I'm joined by Dan DiVincenzo from RWA. Now, they're an engineering firm. They work on everything from new community builds, road projects, commercial projects. It was fascinating to dive into the several areas that we did because we got to talk about how a plot of land goes from somebody's vision and an idea all the way through to completion and what that looks like in the real world, how it affects traffic, how it affects the environment around it. I wanted to learn about this because, as you guys see all the time, there's new stuff getting built every day. You kind of wonder how they're building all this and how much further we can build into the state and everything like that. So we do dig into what goes into that. Plus, we talk about some of the things that are going on as this area grows with infrastructure, as new communities come online. How do you get water to those new communities and make sure the water pressure is acceptable for the people living there now versus in the future? How do you plan out roads to mitigate some of this traffic that we see? I mean, you guys know, you get on the road anytime between January, you know, and Easter, and you can probably add 10 to 15 minutes to your drive at least. So we dive into some of the ways that people are mitigating it. It's just fascinating to learn about. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode with Dan from RWA. This episode is brought to you by Southwest Florida Podcast. We help businesses make marketing videos. Now, a lot of businesses see the value in video content, but they don't know where to start. Filming, editing, posting on social media, these can take up a lot of time and they can be pretty frustrating. And that's where we come in. We work with businesses to highlight the value they bring to their customers and share that online. Now, we've created the Marketing Manager's Guide to Video Content that you can download for free by following the link below or scanning the QR code on your screen. Now, enjoy the show. Well, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad we could finally do this. We've been talking for, almost 6 months now. And so one of the things I just wanted to dive right into was the water supply issue that you mentioned. So what's going on with that? I guess just we can give people a little context of what's going on, but
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat with you and kind of go over some of the things that are happening down here in Southwest Florida. One of the issues that we've been running into here within the last, it's really been about a year and a half, is water supply and demand due to the increased development that we've seen down here in Southwest Florida. So Fort Myers runs their own water treatment plant. Lehigh Acres runs their own water treatment plant. Lee County has their treatment plants. And what we've been finding since about the 18-19 sort of a time frame is pressures within the system have started to decrease, right? As more houses come online, there's more demand on the system. So you start having water pressures that are decreasing. We like to see anywhere between about a 25 and a 55 PSI for residential neighborhoods. And in certain instances, we're having lower pressures. And most of that is due to the fact that we just can't keep up with the demand.
So this is something, and you were mentioning before, this is something that's happening a lot in Lehigh now, or these places where they're building new communities and things like that. It is the issue that there's just not, the infrastructure in place can't provide enough pressure to it. So, I mean, you mentioned that they're holding up some construction for it. What's the overall problem that they're running into, and then what impact is that having on builders and contractors right now?
Sure. So the current supply that Fort Myers is getting augmented by Lee County water plants. Fort Myers is under contract with Lehigh Acres to provide some additional water to them for the increased development that has been going on. Really since about that COVID time, because everybody really ramped up construction during COVID time. We were kind of that sanctuary state. Everybody wanted to move down here. So right now what's happening, we've got a couple of projects from multifamily residential projects, apartment complexes, and then some single family residential complexes that they want to ensure that the current supply is meeting the folks that have already, already have water meters, and we're not continuing to be a hindrance to those folks by bringing new subdivisions online. So it's recertification of water plants to make sure that they can treat the proper amount of water to be able to distribute it. And in certain cases, for example, Fort Myers, they just brought a new well online within the last 6 to 12 months, and they've got about another 7 that they're going to need to tap into the groundwater to bring them into the treatment plant to start meeting the demand within the within Lee County.
Okay, so these are like individual wells that run into the water plant. Not necessarily that they need to have 7 new water plants, but they need to find basically 6 or 7 new water sources to feed into that.
Exactly. They need to pipe groundwater sources into the plant so that the plant can start turning out more treated water to those places and increase the pressures within the system.
Okay. And if they don't do that, is that going to end up holding up some of this construction that's really kind of in progress now?
Yes. Yes. So we're seeing, you know, typically going through the development stages, when we're installing underground pressure pipe or the contractors are installing underground pressure pipe, they're tapping into an existing water main, and then they're drawing off of that existing water main. In order to do that, they need to flush and then bacteriologically test those lines to make sure that we're providing clean drinking water to those new residences. Well, every time we tap the system gets taxed. And every time the system gets taxed, your pressures are dropping. So in order to go through and do the flush, we used to do them off peak hours, so like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. The inspector would come out, they'd open up the hydrants, and they'd flush anything that was in the line during construction out. They'd go through and chlorinate the lines to make sure the lines are clean. In certain instances, Fort Myers is not allowing, they're not allowing very many flushes to go on. So it's okay. Slowing the development process. It's slowing the turnover process because they don't want to overtax the system and then leave residents with less water pressure than they had previously.
Okay. So the way that it works is they've got the plant, then they have the main line, that's like the main source of water, and then as these new developments take place, like I'm just make this up, like I know you guys worked on Arborwood Preserve, but sure. Like I'm just thinking of Gateway and that kind of area for that example. I know there's like Eagle Creek or Timber Creek, whatever it's called up there, sure. Off Daniels, but so you got a main water line, and then when those neighborhoods get built, they'll kind of build an auxiliary or an ancillary water line off of that main water line to provide water to that community. And so essentially they'll do that for this community. A new one comes online, they do it for this and this. So as you go along, the pressure drops and drops because it's kind of taking the same amount of water and trying to distribute that to more and more places.
Sure. Yeah, I would say okay. One of the easiest ways for everybody to really understand is think about your garden hose.
Okay.
So if your garden hose is your transmission main and you only, you know, and you stretch it out along the driveway and you turn your garden hose on, you're getting a steady stream of water out the end of the garden hose. Now, if you were to cut that garden hose into sections and then put sprinkler systems or, you know, inline sprinkler system all the way through and still leave the end open on the other side, you're going to get basically residual loss from each one of those branches that are coming off the garden hose.
Okay.
So for example, down like Daniels Parkway, where you talked about, Timber Creek North, they're going to end up doing a Timber Creek South here before too long. So it'd be on both sides of the road.
Okay.
But you've got a transmission main that runs all the way down Daniels. Now, everything that runs down Daniels from Tree Line Road all the way to 82, or is that 80? No. So all the way to 82, that transmission main is tapped for the Legacy Gateway apartment complexes. It's tapped, in a looped system that feeds that area. There's an additional one called Parkway Preserve just to the north of Legacy Gateway. So that's tapped off of the same system.
Okay.
As you continue to move down the line, then yes, you've got Timber Creek, you've got Gateway Services District, you've got the stadium that's over there. All of that is tapped off of and maybe looped into another connection point or another line. But essentially, yes, it's taxing the system the further down the line it goes.
Okay. And do you think that it's going to require like a new plant to be built in that area? Or do you think that just tapping those and adding additional wells that feed into it, would that solve the problem? Or would that be more of a 5 to 10 year Band-Aid kind of?
You know, I mean, unfortunately, I'm not an engineer. I'm just a construction guy.
Okay.
But what I understand about water systems is, yes, the additional wells are going to allow for more capacity, but at the same time, the treatment plants have to have the capacity to treat the water.
Okay.
And then continue to put it, you know, push it out towards the to the customers, essentially, right? So for the continued expansion that we're going to see in Southwest Florida, they're going to need to bring new plants online.
Gotcha.
And those projects are, you know, 2, 3, 5 years in the making from the time that they decide that they're going to need one, or, you know, for the 2025, the 2030. Now we're looking into the 2035 plan, you know, master plan. They're already working on those things and have been for several years. We're just not at the time where they're pulling the trigger and breaking ground on them. So this is going to be, it's going to be something that we're going to face for a little while until some of these get recertified or they start bringing new plants online.
Understood. So this is stuff that people are, they're thinking about, they're planning for, they know that these challenges are going to arise, but then it comes down to the actual execution of them, when it's going to be the right time, kind of bringing all these contractors, engineering firms together to make it happen at the right time. So,
sure.
So there's at least people that are thinking about this, like they know that we're going to run into these issues.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that is on the radar for everybody. Lee County is all up on it. Charlotte County's on it. The Florida Governmental Utility Agency. Everybody's working towards that solution.
Okay.
And the developers, you start looking at the big developers that we're working with. You look at Toll Brothers, Lennar, D.R. Horton, Pulte, Taylor Morrison, LGI Homes. They're all obviously in business to, you know, make money, but they're also working in tandem with the municipalities to make sure that we're doing what we can to provide the housing during the shortages and to keep up with the demand and the influx of people coming down.
Yeah.
But from a business standpoint, if you can't get water to your home and you can't close your home, now you're in trouble. And so the weight is now being put back onto, or these companies are now leaning into the municipality saying, hey, you approved this plan. You said we had capacity. All of these additional neighborhoods are coming online, but you're not letting me close on houses. So the stress is definitely there on both sides.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, we need to come to a conclusion and a solution to get people moved into their homes.
Well, so I don't want to like harp on this too much, but what are some of the solutions that are people talking about solutions to these things, or what's floating around there to make it where it's beneficial for both? So that way these builders aren't feeling like, well, hey, should we even invest in this area because we're just going to get, you know, we're going to be like these kind of financially tricky situations moving forward. Like, is this going to be the new normal moving forward? But then you have the county that doesn't want to put people in a bad spot. So what are they talking about in terms of like solutions to make these things, I don't know, solve them now and then make them gel more in the future?
Sure. So FDEP, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, has taken over most of the water, and they've had the wastewater for a while, but they've taken over kind of the water clearance process.
Okay.
From Fort Myers, Lee County, and they're running it all through the FDEP. FDEP is currently working on re-rating the Lehigh plant, which should happen within the next 30 or so days. You know, typically a 30-day review time. They'll come back with comments. You got to address the comments, and then they'll go back and review it again, re-rate it, and make sure that it can handle the increased demand.
Okay.
And from there, they're able to bring new subdivisions online as that re-rating process goes. So that would be the quickest way, is re-rate the plants and make sure the plants can keep up with the demand. At the same time, then it would be getting through the approval process to bring a new plant online, and getting those plants through kind of the bureaucracy of you know, the paperwork process. Where is it going to be located? Whose land is it going to be on? Where do we need to go find these, find these things in order to make this happen? So that's kind of the long-term solution. And then obviously going through, like, for example, City of Fort Myers drilling wells, takes a little while to drill a well and takes a minute to get it piped into the system so that it can go and be treated. But that's kind of you've got a short-term solution, which is re-rate. You got your interim solution, which is drilling more wells to get more water to the plants. And it's all kind of follows those steps. You got to re-rate it to get more water to it. You got to go through those processes to make it happen.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
So that's one of the struggles that we've got within, typically the Lee County area. Collier County doesn't have, it doesn't have the treatment problem. Got as it. Of right now. Or okay. The distribution problem.
Understood. Well, and one of the other things too that you mentioned that was interesting were these moratoriums on building. So I know that certain jobs have to be done in a certain time. I don't know. Can you touch on some of that?
Sure. I mean, you know, obviously with the hurricane, you know, we've seen the amount of, you know, the damage and destruction that it did to Fort Myers Beach, for example. And for folks, I've only been in Florida since 2019. A little background, I'm from Chicago. It's a great place to be from, not a great place to live. Sorry for anybody who's out there and loves Chicago.
Hey, but that's why everybody from up north is moving down here.
Exactly. So when I came off of active duty with the military, I was like, hey, Florida's going to be a great place to be. And I got here just in time. And obviously, we want to see the Fort Myers area, Naples area remain, you know, obviously change with the times, but remain kind of that smaller town feel. Well, with the influx of people, a lot of that's changing. You start to see places like Margaritaville show up. You're going to see a lot of outside investment, and you're going to see bigger structures, less mom and pop type things. And a lot of folks in the Fort Myers area they're not really excited about it. So some of the municipalities are putting moratoriums on things like self-storage buildings. Working on a project off of Dannevirke Parkway in Cape Coral, where small parcel of land, it's the perfect spot for a business to come in and say, hey, this is going to be a self-storage facility, or you know, even like an auto house, you know, auto garage. Well, they said, hey, look, we're putting a stop to these, can't do them in this particular, you know, in these areas. So there's a rush to kind of get, you know, if you've got that piece of land, it better to get it permitted now so that they don't issue the moratorium, and then you can't build your, you know, whatever your structure is or whatever your business model is going to be. And so we're seeing that in certain areas. You okay. know, I don't know that anybody wants to see Southwest Florida turn into Fort Lauderdale.
Well, and that's kind of the concern, I think, because, and I've talked to, I have friends that grew up in Fort Lauderdale, and like I've had multiple of their parents make the same comment. It's like, yeah, you know, this is what Fort Lauderdale used to look like, you know, and I came down here 12 years ago for college, and even in that time, it's changed quite a bit, mm-hmm. but there wasn't nearly as many things built up. There's a lot more like green places and woods and things like that, and those have kind of become storefronts, apartment housing, everything. So it seems like they're building away. But yeah, so how do you prevent it from becoming Fort Lauderdale? I guess these moratoriums would be one
moratoriums. The moratoriums are essentially stopping certain portions of those mom and pop businesses. You know, I mean, you don't see you know, for example, Amazon buying up a small parcel of land and putting a, you know, an Amazon facility there, right? It's somebody who's looking to expand a franchise or whatever the case. But at the same time, it's not something that's doing downtown area beautification. So how do you balance that is an interesting dynamic. But with, you know, material costs that we're seeing, with permitting costs that we're seeing, fill dirt costs that we're seeing, increase in flood elevations, the only people that are really going to be able to come in here and revitalize an area, for example, Cape Coral, Fort Myers Beach, city of Fort Myers, and some of those areas that had a significant amount of hurricane damage, Bonita Beach as well, are going to be the companies that have enough money in order to do that, right? So we're going to see a change, but again, the municipality is the approval authority. So if it's not zoned for, you know, the high rise structure, it's not going to get approved unless you go through the process to change the zoning. So that all has to do with, you know, city council members. It has to do with, you know, the planning and zoning board. It has to do with the next iteration of planning for the future, right? So that 2035 plan, that 2050 plan. It's going to take a while to get back to, you know, what we would consider to be normal in this area for the hurricane damage. But that normal is going to be very different from what it was prior to the hurricane, which is sad.
Yeah. And what impact, so what, I guess with the hurricane and with this like huge growth of people, what impact is that having on infrastructure in terms of like roadways and things like that? What are you seeing on that front?
I mean, if you've been in the car in Southwest Florida, you can witness the impact as you drive down the street.
I feel it every morning off Corkscrew.
Oh yeah, more car. Yeah, I mean, there's more cars in more places in more neighborhoods, and all of those people are driving to more locations, right? So 75 is a nightmare. They're tearing everything up from basically Sarasota down to exit 191 in that kind of Venice Northport area. Yeah. Doing a lot of bridge repairs, expanding a lot of those roads. You mentioned Corkscrew Road. There's another one where they're doing the massive lane expansion that's moving you east of 75, which is, you know, much needed and long overdue. One of the things that has been kind of on the radar but hasn't been widely talked about is the Alico Road expansion that's going to take Alico Road out towards 82. To start giving people a thoroughfare through there. They've been talking about that. I think that was in the starting in the 2025 or maybe it was the 2030 plan.
Oh, interesting.
To start doing that. But at the same time, when you look at Collier County, for example, you have, you know, your Immokalee Road, your Vanderbilt Beach, you've got your Orange Blossom that gives you that little cut through, you got Pine Ridge Road, you know, and several that give you a nice east-west flow of traffic. But then you've got Logan, then you've got Collier Boulevard, you've got 41, you've got 75, you've got Imperial, you've got Livingston, you know, so there's a lot of north-south and east-west thoroughfares. So Collier County doesn't seem as bad as southern portions of Lee County. You start getting into Bonita Beach or down Bonita Beach Road, you've got Bonita Beach Road is your main east-west.
Yeah.
Especially east of 75. Now they did the Logan extension that kind of weaves you through the neighborhoods back there, but any further east than that, you've got no north-south thoroughfare. Corkscrew Road's the same way. Anybody, you know, if there's anything that happens at east of Alico Road on Corkscrew,
you're going
you gotta go all the way out yeah. to and then you take you know, get out to you know, 82, take that down to
either go south
Oilwell or Immokalee.
Yeah. Or go up to Fort Myers.
Or go up to Fort Myers, and then you're in the Daniels mess, right? So you start looking, you start continuing north. What do you have? You've got, you know, 82, you know, starting in the east, you got 82 that is getting people kind of north-south, and you can get to, you know, Colonial, you can get to Corkscrew, you can get to Daniels. You've got Ben Hill Griffin, which then turns into Treeline, so there's a north-south. And what do you have after that? You've got Michael G. Rip, you've got 6 Mile Cypress that kind of does the loop. But anything to the east of 75, you've only got that one option,
yeah.
which is Ben Hill. I always call it Peter Griffin Road, but Ben Hill Griffin. you got Ben Hill Griffin, and which turns into Treeline. That's your only escape from those areas. So my suggestion really would be if, you know, we're going to continue any development down Corkscrew, we're going to continue those developments down Daniels, is find a way to start making some of those north-south roads so that you can get into these communities the back way. You know, growing up in Chicago or growing up in Lauderdale or growing up in Detroit, growing up, you know, wherever, you've got, you know, a grid system. I'm not saying we need to turn this place into a grid system by any means, because grid system's ugly, but still need to have access. So that's mm-hmm. that's what developers need to kind of pay attention to. But it's not just incumbent on the developers, because that also includes or incurs a lot more development cost. But at the same time, you start looking at the municipalities, Village of Estero, City of Fort Myers, Lee County. You know, the question that you get from a lot of residents is, why aren't we able to fill in the blank? Why aren't we able to create thoroughfares through these areas? Why aren't we able to do those things? Which leads you to another can of worms, which is affordable housing.
Yeah,
the housing market down here is not affordable for most people. Rent hovers around that $3,500 to $4,000 on average market. So you start looking at single family residential homes. When I moved down here, home prices were anywhere between, you know, the mid 200s to maybe the mid 6s, 8s. You'd find a couple for 1.2, 2.2, unless you got into some of the really, really expensive neighborhoods,
sure.
right? But a home that was selling for $300,000 in the beginning of 2019 is now selling for $675,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, a lot of that's supply and demand.
Yeah.
Right? But and we already know that we have a housing shortage. A lot of that is material cost and increases, development cost and increases. So now if you give it to the developer that says, hey, you can build this neighborhood, but you have to build all of this other thoroughfare to get to your neighborhood or to and from this neighborhood, what happens to the cost of the house?
Mm-hmm.
it's going to continue to increase.
Well, and then you have like the CDDs and all that stuff. So those will be high. So people will look at that almost as an additional negative. Because I mean, with some of that stuff, I'd imagine you'd have an additional monthly payment that would be similar to an HOA cost. Like each house would be up to like $400 or $500 per month for some of that stuff. If you had to build out all of that and wrap up, that's how they wrap the cost in, right? Through those CDDs. Like if they need to build out, maybe I have this wrong. That's what I was always under the impression of, but like if the developers need to build these things out, build out the roads to get out there, build out the water system, sewage, all that, that's like what those are made for, right?
Yes.
To offset that cost.
Right. The community development district ends up taking ownership and maintenance of a lot of the development, right? But somebody still has to pay the upfront cost. Well, the upfront cost comes now into, whether you're a company that's coming in and buying finished lots, for example, the finished lot cost could increase from $24,000 to $48,000, right? So now I just doubled the cost of my development. Who ends up taking that burden on? And it's going to be the homeowner. Right. Yeah. Now the association dues, whether it's your HOA or the CDD, those are the maintenance dues. So your Lank Bank, for example, has eroded because we had a real bad rainy season, then we had a dry season, and then lake levels went down and you started getting washouts. Well, those are special assessment fees, and those are the things that are being paid by the CDDs through the homeowners associations and through those, essentially your monthly due or your quarterly due. Roads need maintenance. That's all going through the CDD. Oh, we need new asphalt in community X because it's 20 years old. All of that comes through either a special assessment or that comes from a raise in the HOA rates.
So that would drive the prices of either the houses or the land up, or what it takes to maintain them. So I didn't want to derail you from the affordable housing piece. So how does that all play in? Obviously, if these are higher, it's not going to be affordable housing, and it's going to be harder to find businesses that want to take on projects to do that. But where do these two issues kind of come together?
So, obviously, yeah, we talk about the push for affordable housing. Where is the affordable housing? The affordable housing is typically in what some people call F locations, right? So those are far out. I'd rather have a 45-minute drive to, my place of business or my, educational institution or whatever the case, and keep my costs low. Well, we're kind of running out of land in that respect. Yeah. So where are those F locations? Well, those F locations are now going out to Alva. They're now going out to places in Hendrick County. They're going out to Lehigh Acres. And in order to bring an additional distribution network, whether it's roads, water, sewer, force main, reclaimed water, all those types of things, that development, as it's pushing further out, that development is increasing. You look at the increases in trucking, you look at the increases in fill, where the concrete plant's located, where is the quarry, where am I getting my dirt from, and then obviously trucking costs and inflation and all those things play a part in it as well. You start moving north, right? We start talking about F locations that are further north. Well, what do you have between Pine Island Road or Bayshore Road and Punta Gorda? A whole lot of nothing.
Yeah.
Is the developer going to pay for the on-ramp, off-ramp costs? What is that going to do to the development around that area? So really what you would be looking for at that point would be something like a teaching arm of FGCU, for example, would be a good idea. So, hey, we're going to have the College of Nursing is actually going to expand, and FGCU through donations is going to build a teaching hospital between Tucker's Grade and Pine Island Road, for example, right? So now the development and the industry that's being brought into that location is absorbing a lot of those costs in order to start generating their revenue and start building up that area surrounding, that location. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it would be an example, right?
Well, and you're hearing about some companies doing that too. I know Arthrex's been doing that for a long time, but there's some other companies that you're hearing of now. I was just reading something, but they were saying that they'll hire people, they'll get people to accept jobs that want to come down to the area. But then in,
I don't know if it was like 40% of the cases, the people that they hire end up not working for them because they can't find like an affordable place to live. It's pretty wild.
Oh yeah. It's actually going on in Chicago, and they're doing it on the other coast. But so there's a company in Chicago, name escapes me, that's packing up their entire operation and moving down to the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area.
Okay.
Packing up the whole, I mean, we're talking, it's a multi-billion dollar enterprise, and they're packing up everybody and they're moving them down here. Well, it's tough for them to find places over there as well.
Yeah. Right?
So it's not unheard of.
Yeah, it's wild. It'll be interesting to see what happens with some of this stuff. But I wanted to ask you about some of the questions. Like, I had some questions about the different projects that you guys worked on. So sure. I guess to give people some context, can you give everybody a rundown of what you guys do at RWA? And then I want to dig into some of these specific projects.
Sure, absolutely. So we're a civil engineering, land planning, survey, construction services, as well as a landscape architecture firm. We've got three office locations. First office location is 26 years old, and it's down here in Naples. And then opened up our Fort Myers office several years ago and just moved into a new space off of University in the Morgan & Morgan building, and in the Welland Park development just outside of Venice, really in kind of the Northport area. Very up and coming location, right next to Cool Today Park, where the Atlanta Braves are playing baseball.
Okay.
We've got a nice downtown development that we should be getting CO on that building, I believe, next Friday. So we'll have a brand new office up and running over there.
Okay.
And, we've got a good mix of public sector projects. We're working with the municipalities, working on, surveying, land planning, doing, new roads, doing new storm drainage developments and things like that. And then we also have our private sector stuff, which are really the bread and butter is going to be the residential neighborhoods. You'd mentioned Arborwood was, one that was fairly big, did some things in Pelican Preserve, we've done Pelican Sound, we've done the Portico development, phases 2, 3, phase 4. So that's kind of our bread and butter. We've got Tamarindo down in Collier County, which is another large housing development. Antilles is a multifamily development going down towards Marco Island. Do some assisted living facilities in the commercial side of the house.
Okay.
So we've really got, and we have a mix of large and small projects, a couple of 4-lot deals all the way up to 1,250 lot deals.
Okay.
Bidding some things out in Babcock Ranch to get up into that area, things in Charlotte County, things in Sarasota County. We've also got one engineer that does a decent book of business over on the other coast in Miami as well.
All right. Interesting. So let's just take one of the housing developments, for example. So what goes into that? What is the process like? What do you guys look for? What are some of the factors that you got to take into account? And where do you join the process and where do you hand it off to the builders?
Yeah, so I typically, because I'm running the construction department, I actually pick up the process from an approved permit and I take it all the way through closeout. But going down to the beginning stages of the project, a lot of it comes to land for sale. And somebody realizes that, hey, this parcel of land is for sale. What can we do with the land? Where is it zoned? They go through planning and zoning review committees. They go through all their due diligence. They go through neighborhood information meetings to where, they're talking to people within the community. Hey, this is what we're looking to do. Talking to people within the municipality, hey, this is what we want to do. Can we get this rezoned? Can we get this, essentially set up for fill-in-the-blank project or fill-in-the-blank community development, right?
Okay.
So from there, it goes into a conceptual phase where we do conceptual designs. We make sure that the amount of land meets the building codes and the municipality codes that says, hey, you have to have this density. So now you're looking at densities. How many units can I put here? How many single families? How many multifamilies can I have? Do I need to have a commercial element to this development, for example? So that's another portion of the phase. And then after that, it goes into the infrastructure due diligence. What kind of infrastructure do we have? What are we working with? What kind of calculations do we need to do to make sure that we can get water to the development and we can get wastewater out of the development? Okay. What sort of traffic impact does it have? So they'll do traffic impact studies. Do we need to extend turn lanes? Do we need to make, do we need to widen roadways in order to get things in and out? So that all is, you know, sitting in a part of that planning phase. From there, it goes into kind of the plan review and development phase. Now, it's not just with one entity. So you've got environmental resource permits, and the environmental resource permit and plans deal with your lake management. And then you're dealing with some of the wildlife and the species that we have here, for example, gopher tortoise, burrowing owls. You got to get permits to relocate some of those, or you have to wait for the burrowing owls to, you know, get done nesting and doing all that, and then vacate.
Yeah.
So some of these projects take a lot of time because we don't want to have a significant impact to the wildlife. South Florida water management, you got to do surface water management plans to figure out how the stormwater is going to get to the right places. You got to check your FEMA flood zones. You've got to deal with your import and export calculations. How deep do I need to dig my lakes to get my homes to a finished floor elevation where they're not going to flood, because we have to deal with flooding here. People didn't know we're actually on an island. This isn't a peninsula. If you look at the entire state, at Caloosahatchee River runs all the way to the other side of the state through interconnects, right?
Okay.
So this section of Florida is actually an island, right? People don't really see it that way, but
sure,
but it is. So there's an interconnect of lake systems. Next time you look at a map, follow the Caloosahatchee all the way up to Lake Okeechobee, and then you can follow Lake Okeechobee all the way around, and just north of Fort Lauderdale is where that thing actually dissects, and we're on an island. So
that's interesting.
With that being said, what do we have to worry about? Well, we're in a wet climate. We're, obviously in a hurricane zone. We're in flood zones, and there's a certain flood elevation you have to get to. Well, again, talking about impacted development, if I can generate all the dirt that I need on my site, then I don't have to import dirt. Then I can keep development costs or the cost of importing dirt lower and not passing it on to the consumer. So we look at those types of things.
So going through this part, there's a lot to take into effect. It comes down to, you've got the land, somebody has to have a vision for what they want. Then you've got to get buy-in. You've got to get like understanding and approval from the community, from people around. Then you have to conceptualize what this thing is going to be and basically take these theories and overlay it over reality, and then understand, okay, how is this going to impact the environment, the wildlife? What are we going to need to do to get water, traffic to this place? What are we going to need to do to make sure that we don't make everybody's life a living hell in terms of traffic too?
Sure.
And then you got to look at the building costs and materials. How are we going to get it there? What's going to be the most cost effective way to get all this stuff there? So that's even leading up to building it, is understanding all of these aspects.
Yeah. And all of this is really just scratching the surface too, because then whoever the developer is or whoever the home builder is needs to see if it's going to fit their metrics and their model, right? If I know that I need 40-foot lots, 50-foot lots, 60-foot lots, et cetera, how many of these do I need in order to make sure that my development cost is going to work within my profit margin, right? Mm-hmm. Or is going to work within a place where I can make money as a business, but also provide a quality establishment or a quality neighborhood to the end user.
Yeah, right? Whoever takes it.
So, I mean, there have been instances where, this land is too expensive and I can't get enough units on here to make the cost worth the development itself.
Yeah.
So you're not going to develop something that you're going to lose a ton of money on.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense, right?
Okay.
So there's that balance that works.
All right. So you have to go through this process, and then you're then presenting at the end, I guess through that, you have to then present it to the people that could make this a reality, and then it's got to work for them, literally dollars. But okay, that's interesting. So there's so many people involved with this process to make these things happen.
It's a lot of moving parts, right? And obviously we're not the only engineering firm here in Southwest Florida. We've got outside engineers that come in and do work for some of the developments. The best thing that we can really do is make sure that we understand everything that's going on down here. We understand the processes, we understand the systems, understand the inspection schedules, understand the development costs, be able to provide good opinions of costs so that everybody can make the right decision.
Sure.
And in some instances, you know, you run into soil problems, right? So we figure all this stuff out, and then you figure out, oh, we got bad soil, right? Now I have to import more dirt, or you hit an underground anomaly. So now we have to deal with more water management that we didn't anticipate on doing, right? So then you start having your profit and your loss fluctuations, outside of those usually calculated margins of error. And the hope is that, you know, nobody abandons a project in the middle of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's a delicate balance of, you know, really of, you know, intentions, design, budgets, profits, losses. And most of these things take years. So a lot of the land that is being built on right now is land that was picked up shortly after that 2008 to 2012 crash period.
Yeah.
So now you start looking at it, and as we're building on all these lands, other people are saying, well, hey, I've got land for sale too. Well, how much does your land cost? Well, okay, I think I can do a community on this particular plot of land or whatever. But going back to the infrastructure conversation, how much do I have to get there? What are my lots going to look like? So most of that due diligence is done up front when they're in the land negotiation deal to know whether or not to say yes.
Got it. Okay. So are those things that you guys actually help people with on that part with the assessments, or do you kind of work with other companies that handle that? Like somebody's interested in buying a plot of land to figure out if this is something they can do. Do you work with them on that part of the process?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We'll take, somebody says, hey, I'm interested in this piece of land. We'll start from the due diligence phase and take them all the way to construction turnover.
Okay.
If that's what they're looking to do. We have some outside, consultants that do things that are kind of outside of our general scope of work. We don't do a whole lot of environmental things. We don't deal with like the gopher tortoise. We don't deal with monitoring wells and things. So we usually outsource those types of activities. But yeah, if you come to me with a plot of land and you say, this is what I'm looking to do, can I do it? We'll figure out yes or no, or how to get you there. Take you all the way through the design phase, all the way through the development phase, and then all the way through the closeout phase to make sure that you've got a one-stop shop to do that. And nice. Again, there's other engineering firms down here that are doing the same things. We've just got a little bit different process, and we're rolling full steam ahead.
Oh yeah. You like doing it?
I do. I really enjoy doing what I do. Kind of people ask what my job title is, I run the construction department, but I fix things that are broken, right? And that's there's a joke that me and a bunch of guys from the military had. It's I like to fix broken shit. So if there's something that's not following a good strategic process or a good pathway to ensure, obviously in this case, delivering things on time, on quality, on budget, making sure that the division is profitable and things like that. That's where I spend most of my time. I spend most of my time making sure that things are streamlined, that people are informed, that we're having good positive communication, clients are informed as to what the next steps in the process are. Because the one thing that we have to understand is land doesn't make any money. Sales and closings do. So, and what most people don't understand is a residential home builder is essentially a sales and marketing company that happens to build a house, right? That's their product.
Okay.
So everything that goes in on the front end, all the development, everything we've been talking about so far means absolutely nothing until somebody pays for the house.
Yeah.
Right. From a company standpoint, because you can have the land, you can sit on it, you can own it, but until somebody's actively buying it and paying you back over, for that debt that you've incurred for development, you're not making any money.
Yeah, so, you don't have a business.
So what does everybody want? Well, they want a guaranteed close date. Well, for most engineers, certainty is not something that they're willing to stake their life on. Well, we can say within a very, very small margin of error that if this happens on this day and this happens on this day, this is the last possible day you can do this, we can essentially almost guarantee that you're going to be closing a home on X, Y, and Z day, right? Now, okay. you get that onesie, twosie anomaly, like, hey, Lee, I can't provide you with enough water. that guarantee kind of goes by the wayside. But that's what we do. We're developing systems to keep everything on track and make sure they have predictable closing days when they can start looking at turning money. Because obviously they answer to somebody else too. Right? Yeah. Most of the big home builders are on the NASDAQ. They're on the S&P 500. They're on DJI. And they have to, you know, they're answering to that corporate entity that's saying, hey, I need 1,200 homes out of you this year. And how, you know, how are we going to get there? Right? How are we going to get to those closings?
Yeah.
So where we're very successful is saying, hey, this is going to be your time slot. This is when it's going to work. Are we going to meet your timeline? No. Okay, great. Well, then these guys need to do this over here to make sure that we can meet this timeline. Right.
Got it. Okay. So you're constantly solving problems and solving puzzles, putting puzzles together.
Most of the time.
Okay.
Most of the time.
It's cool.
I try to solve more problems than I create. I mean, that's, you know, it's not really good to create problems for yourself. But yeah, we've started a little kind of side construction division where if, you know, everybody gets overloaded, we realize that we can't design everything, right? So if there's an outside firm or an outside entity that's designing something, but you want predictable construction services, that's the new section of the business that we're working on. So,
okay.
You know, the idea is to remain competitive, bring a high level of service, make sure the clients are getting what they're asking for, making sure that, again, we're delivering things to the end user on time, quality product, on budget, and we're providing that predictable path.
Got it. Okay. Understood. And are you guys hiring right now?
We are.
Okay.
We are. We're actively hiring for survey party chiefs. We're actively hiring for EIs, EITs, PEs. We're looking for, got a construction manager position opening up within the company as well. Permitting folks, you know, we're for the Welland Park office, we need to staff a whole office. So if anybody's up in the Sarasota, Venice, Northport area, we're going to need somebody for permitting. We're going to need a staff engineer. May need a you know, junior engineer, somebody who just you know, recently got their PE, and eventually we're going to need somebody doing construction up there. I mean, obviously the construction department's expanding, so probably need somebody who's going to be up there. But that'll be a little bit in the future. But okay. Yes, we're always looking for folks.
Understood. All right. Yeah, and maybe we'll link back to some of those on the episode show notes and all that kind of stuff, where they can find that. I mean, what's it like working for the company?
Right now, I would say is probably the best time to get into the company. Right, we've had a team of people that have obviously built this from scratch 26 years ago and gone through the ups and downs. At one point, I think there were like 95 employees that were working for the company, and then you know that kind of fell off during the downturn between 2008 and 2012-13. I was a victim of that myself. I actually, when I graduated college, it was right at that 08, 09 timeframe, and coming out as a construction guy, couldn't get a job. So I ended up joining the military, something I always wanted to do. And that was kind of the time to do it. So, and we've had, I think at one point we had as few as 10 folks, but since I've been with the company, since 2019, we fluctuate between that 35 and 40, so, you know, 30 to 40 folks within the two offices. Obviously opening up the Welland Park office, we're gonna need to get, we've got an engineer already up there and, you know, get a good team built around him, you know, maybe 5-6 people up there. But you couldn't come into this company at a better time. We've got, you know, got some young blood. We've got a guy that just took his, professional exam to get his PE. We're gonna start building a team around him. We've got, some interesting projects that are coming up. Company culture is kind of getting revitalized into, a more project driven and then project rewarding type of a business, where a lot of engineering firms are doing, you know, like standard profit sharing or whatever. We're working on making things performance based, and obviously going through streamlining processes, you've got a clear path to get to that end goal. Well, if that end goal is X dollars of profit, anything over that is going to go directly to the team, right? So you have to do something different in the market to be able to attract some of that talent, and we're moving into a system of operations that is going to make work fun.
Nice.
Right. You know, everybody's had that job where you walk into the office, you're like, oh God, I'm here again.
Yeah, been there before.
We're building a community of folks that celebrate victories. Identify weaknesses within the team and build people up. Right. We're looking to elevate, not eliminate. And I would say it's a great time to be a part of this organization.
That's awesome. Dude, I'm glad to hear it, man. Yeah. That's awesome. I guess before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, I mean, I would say generally the four ways, if I can impart any bit of wisdom on anybody within the building industry, the business industry down here in Southwest Florida, the four things that we've found for, you know, specifically for our builders is increase your utilization rates. And by that, I mean, whatever time is spent should be time captured. Well, you can do that one of two ways. You can increase your utilization rate by working your people more, or you can start streamlining your processes. So where we've seen the most benefit and the biggest result is streamlining the processes and making sure that nothing's easy, right? But everything can be simple. If we simplify things and we get a good clear path as to what we're doing, we realize that something that used to take 15 minutes is now taking 7. Well, I just essentially cut my time in half, but I'm getting the same result. So utilization rates are huge. I always ask people to look at their budgets versus what they actually spent. So most of the time when people finish projects, they're like, yay, we're done with that one. That one's off my plate, move on to the next one. Take some time to go in and look at what you budgeted for the project, where your actual expenses were, and start conducting that analysis so you can figure out, hey, why did we spend, you know, why are we over budget here? Why were, you know, and it's not to micromanage people, but, you know, perhaps it's, hey, I didn't have the right person in the right seat. So really what we're looking for is right person, right seat. If you got the wrong person, get them in the right seat. If you got the right person in the wrong seat, get them, you know, moved over. And, you know, or if you need some professional development, right? Nobody wakes up and says, oh, I want to suck tomorrow. I did okay today, but I want to suck tomorrow, right? But if you need some professional development, then we identify those areas. We start moving people into, you know, hey, so-and-so is really good at this. Go hang out with him for a few days. I'll take that overhead time because it's making my team better. So yeah. A lot of that can be seen through your budget versus accruals. Templatizing and automating. If there's a system that can do it, spend the overhead time, get yourself a template and try to automate that. Anything that you can leverage from an AI standpoint to do things for you, whether it's running reports or whatever, those are going to be good ways to spend money. And then keep those applications to a minimum, right? So looking at businesses that are capturing high utilization rates and capturing a lot of revenue are typically using anywhere between 0 to 10 systems, right? Now, and when I say systems in this industry, it's, you know, like AutoCAD, it's Revit, it's Bluebeam, it's Adobe, it's Microsoft Word, it's Microsoft Excel. You know, you kind of roll the whole Microsoft suite into really one application. But for the folks that have real convoluted systems, you're actually seeing a decrease in profitability because everybody's spending too much time moving things into those systems. So the process inefficiencies and the duplications are going to be your profit killers.
Yeah.
And you know, those are the things that we're focusing on 2023 to make sure that we get rid of all of those redundancies and all of those systems, and we've got nice clear paths. And ultimately, if it's going to make us successful, it's going to make our clients successful. And the only thing that the only way that we're ever able to be successful is through and with the assistance of other people, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's self-made. I don't believe in that. There was somebody that guided you in the right direction, or that you learned a poor habit from, or saw a poor habit out of that you wanted to change within yourself. Well, you can look at a company the same way you look at those sorts of things. And that's what's going to ultimately make you more successful, make you more profitable, and start bringing things into the community that are going to leave a lasting positive impact.
Nice. All right. Think about those. I'll think about those four. I'll probably give you a call probably next week and be like, hey, I have a question about this.
Yeah, but, talk to me.
Yeah, all right.
I build checklists for a living. I'll leave you with this one. Okay, so use this as an example. So there were two American Airlines pilots that went into outpatient surgery facilities in New York, okay, to figure out what their success rates were for outpatient surgery. Now, we'll use, for example, an amputated toe or a toe that needs to be amputated as the example, right? There were certain facilities that had a 58% success rate and certain facilities that had a 86% success rate, right? And when I say success rate, I mean the dude walked out of there, but he walked out with the wrong amputated toe. okay, because they weren't following a system. Well, they developed a checklist for the emergency departments and for the outpatient surgery centers, and some of those surgery centers didn't want to pay the note, right? It was too expensive. And in order to kind of drive their point home, they said, well, do you want to know what American Airlines success rate is for takeoffs and landings? I'm not talking about lost luggage. I'm not talking about canceled flight due to weather delays, but for takeoffs and landings, can you guess what the success rate is? And they're like 99%, right? And that dude that was writing the checklist is like, hey, look, if we were successful 99.99% of the time, we'd lose 840 aircraft a year.
Yeah.
Right. So when you look at the process that they go through, right, it doesn't matter if the first officer's flying with a new captain or the Czech airman's flying with a new first officer, whatever the case, they're following all of these systems. And they're producing the positive result of every time they take off, they land safely, right? Mm-hmm. With that being said, I kind of took that mentality and I applied it to business.
So you built out your pre and post flight checklists for your business.
We have a pre and post flight checklist. We've got a project checklist. We've got project trackers. We've got, you know, things that disseminate information to the clients where they can go in and they can access at a moment's notice, hey, where's my project? What's coming up next? Right. And all of that adds value. And it also keeps my email traffic down,
yeah,
which is really nice. A lot of people get bogged down in emails or have to hire an assistant just to read the email. We're going to be completely transparent with the data. All that data is going to file a checklist. You're going to know the process just the same way we know the process. And it's all essentially open source. I'm not trying to hide it from anybody, right? If my clients are seeing success rates with me and they can replicate that with somebody else, what is it really doing? It's really helping my client. What's my client going to do? They're going to come to me when they need additional assistance, right? And then I become the expert. Whether we win the job or we don't win the job, ultimately it's about building that positive and solid relationship. And it just so happens I've been able to do that via checklist. So if you've got any need for it, let me know. We'll help you out.
All right, sweet. Yeah, and actually the business that I'm moving into, I just took the sales manager role, is called Vessel Vanguard, and one of the pieces of it is a pre and post trip checklist to make sure that everything on the boat is solid, safe, no leaks, nothing's like off, there's no loose hoses, all that kind of stuff, because when you get out on the water and something goes wrong, it's one of the air and the water are a few of the places that you definitely don't want things to go wrong. So
absolutely.
That's interesting.
All absolutely.
Right. So where can people connect with you?
So they can connect with me via LinkedIn. I'm sure we can put it up on the
I'll throw it in the show notes.
Up on the show notes. Connect with me via LinkedIn. You can go to consult-rwa.com. That's going to be our webpage. And then if you see me up on the webpage, it's my first initial D, my last name, DiVincenzo, at consult-rwa. If you want to feel like sending me an email, more than welcome to do that. I believe my phone number is listed all over my LinkedIn and things like that. Send me a message, shoot me a text, shoot me a note on LinkedIn. I'm usually good about getting back to everybody. My goal is really to respond to everybody within 24 hours and get you some sort of result within 14 days. So try to stay on that track as much as possible, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody likes to be left hanging and nobody likes their time wasted. So, but yeah, everybody, you know, if you're interested in connecting, find me in those areas and, you know, hopefully we can do some work together. If not, just have a good conversation. I like to play golf.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, Dan, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate
you, Chris. Cool. Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Southwest Florida Podcast. We help businesses make marketing videos. Now, a lot of businesses see the value in video content, but they don't know where to start. Filming, editing, posting on social media, these can take up a lot of time and they can be pretty frustrating. And that's where we come in. We work with businesses to highlight the value they bring to their customers and share that online. Now, we've created the Marketing Manager's Guide to Video Content that you can download for free by following the link below or scanning the QR code on your screen.